The need to resist mob mentality becomes ever more important. I'm Marco Perry. Welcome to the Perry Platform. Given recent unrest, both across the globe and within our own borders, it's important that we address some mental hazards that arise in times of chaos. In particular, I want to focus on the fallacy that could be described as the fallacy of the vociferous minority, or the fallacy of the loud minority, however you want to call it. This fallacy occurs when a small, but vocal, group's opinions or demands are given disproportionate attention or consideration. What's that do? It leads to an inaccurate representation of public opinion or consensus. So, here's a very basic fact. I think we can all agree on this. Just because a group is loud or passionate about their views, that does not necessarily mean that their views are representative of the larger population or their arguments are more valid. In fact, it's often the opposite. I find that often the loudest people are the most clueless, and that's true on both sides of the political spectrum, on the left and on the right. The loudness is often a shield that they're putting up to hide them from being challenged by legitimate arguments that pose a threat to their worldview. One thing to consider in the context of what we're seeing today is that large protests don't necessarily mean that they are righteous causes. Loud, being obnoxious, it doesn't mean that you are smarter or more correct because you display these values. Now, at the same time, it doesn't disqualify you either. But it appears to me that many people are falling victim to bully tactics from mobs, and they're being either forced, coerced, or tacitly implied that they have to adhere to a certain principle, otherwise face repercussions. Oftentimes, these repercussions are being doled out unjustly as well. You can look at the blockade of a popular Montreal crossing port that disturbed many people's lives. They literally set up benches so people couldn't drive through. Now, I seem to recall what happened when truckers tried to do that in Windsor. The government got really involved. It'll be interesting to see what they do given this context. If it wasn't clear before, I think it's obvious now that the government plays favorites. You can take a very similar situation, very similar acts of protesting, but change the context and the government's going to act very differently. On one hand, if you're truckers, you're being accused of being a white supremacist, when truly it seems like your cause is something different. But if you're protesting because of Middle Eastern conflicts, well, authorities are going to handle that a different way. This hypocrisy is not going unnoticed by the civilian population. Another example of bully tactics that are unjustly doling out punishment involves Trudeau. Now, whether you like him or not, it doesn't matter. He was ambushed at a private dinner in Vancouver recently. Pro-Palestinian protesters harassed him and demanded that he call for a ceasefire. Now, aside from wondering what the PM of Canada can do to actually produce a ceasefire, we have to understand that this type of hostility runs counter to democratic values. It's not protesting when you lose sight of your honor and you give in to mob outrage. It does nothing to convince people, and oftentimes it alienates the majority, which is often silent, like many of the listeners to this podcast. And we're being alienated from your cause because of what we're seeing. We don't want to be lumped in with extremists on any side. In the Trudeau situation, Vancouver needed 100 police officers, one of which got punched in the face by a protester, to settle the situation. That's a scary moment. That's a small, loud, vicious group that's trying to use bully tactics to coerce the Prime Minister to give in to their demands. That's not democracy. That's not a conversation, a debate, or an exchange of ideas. That's simple mob rule. Now, the individuals that are part of this group, I don't blame necessarily each of them the same. I'm sure there were some ringleaders who were inspiring people to get riled up, but oftentimes when you're in a mob or group environment, it's easy to get caught up in the flows of that group dynamic. Some of the greatest atrocities that humans commit occur when they're under things like mob influence or rule. And the individuals that make up this wider group often reflect back and regret what they've done, because they weren't able to think clearly given the influences at play. See how things are influencing you, and truly determine if what you're doing is something to be proud of. It's essential that we consider a variety of opinions and evaluate arguments based on evidence and reasoning, rather than the intensity or volume with which people are expressing them. On one, we have pure emotion, which many people will differ on, and on the other, we have a more logical place where we can arrive and have some middle grounds. This logical fallacy of groupthink, or mob violence, or however you want to call it, highlights the importance of not letting a vocal group dominate the discussion or dictate the narrative. This brings me to my next point, which is the distortion of reality that occurs as a byproduct of that. If all you had access to was Instagram and other social media outlets, you would likely draw a conclusion that public opinion was far more uniform and in line with trendy social justice platitudes than it really is. I've had this experience, and I'm sure you can relate to it. For every one pro-Israel post you see on social media, you've likely seen five or more pro-Palestinian. Now, given that ratio, you're going to draw certain conclusions. But according to polls, like one done by mainstream research, a majority of Canadians favor Canada's support for Israel in its war with Hamas, which most respondents classify as a terrorist group, by the way. According to your social media feed and algorithm, that might come as a surprise. Now, also, overall, 71% of Canadians support Canada calling for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, but get this. The way we go about it is where many people have a different opinion than that of some of the loudest protesters. 81% say that a ceasefire must start with the return of hostages taken by Hamas. So, if that's the criteria, what good is it to be harassing Trudeau at a private dinner, getting him to make the first step in a global conflict that doesn't involve him, in one where he has very little power? It seems logical to think that the return of hostages would be a good step to finding peace. So why aren't the protesters protesting against Hamas right now and encouraging them to do that? If the goal is peace now, the quickest way to achieve that seems to be by doing this. I see very few calls for that, even though it's something that's very popular with a lot of people. Something a lot of people can get behind. Many people actually do support a ceasefire, but it seems like the priorities are not in line with many of the most vocal protesters. Wherever you reside on this conflict, I often see a certain blindness. One side can only acknowledge one fact, and they can't take into account any other considerations. That's true going both ways here. That's not a path forward that's going to work for anyone. Not many people believe that Trudeau is how a ceasefire is going to begin, and that causing chaos while he's having a normal meal is a good idea. Yet, all you need is a handful of people to create that perception, or to inspire people to join in on that demonstration. My key message here is that, regardless of where you stand on polarizing issues, it's important to remain logical, to not fall victim to fallacies, and to have productive conversations and demonstrations. Not violence, nor threats, nor bullying, nor hostility, nor shutting down roadways where people need to use them to get to work. Or perhaps there are emergencies. People need to get to hospitals or places like that. There are crimes going on. Police have to get places. Think about what you're doing and if it makes sense in the context of the problem you're trying to tackle. In a beautiful country like ours, with such a diversity of people, we cannot let global politics tear us apart from within. We have to be importing the best things, because that's what's going to bring us together. We cannot balkanize and split apart. That is why a national identity as Canadians is crucial. We need something to unite people who otherwise have very little in common. This must be remembered. Otherwise, it'll be us that pays the price. Study history and look at what happens when groups have such boiling conflict with each other. It always ends in violence and chaos. Canada and much of the West has been an exception, where people of many different backgrounds with past historical grievances can still come together and live peacefully. Let's not forsake that, because that is not the norm. It's an exception, and it's an exception that has to be defended. Now, with that, it does bring us to the end of our conversation for today. If you enjoyed the material, be sure to leave a review and share to help us grow. And you can find me online at perryplatform.org and on social media at perryplatform. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you soon.